Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is artist, illustrator, and turtle maven, Matt Patterson. Recent published examples of his work can be seen in Of Time and Turtles and The Book of Turtles, the latter is for young readers. Matt, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
I had never seen your artwork before of Time and Turtles. I picked it up. I saw both your painting work and your line drawing work, and it was amazing. And then I picked up The Book of Turtles, which really features your artwork, and your artwork is beautiful, and that's why I wanted to talk to you. Talk to me. Look, you know, we should promote. I didn't get a chance to promote The Book of Turtles. How would you describe that book?
The Book of Turtles is a book celebrating, pretty straightforward, Book of Turtles, celebrating turtles that has amazing turtle facts, conservation, evolution, and just we even have a section of celebrity turtles. We have four profiles of celebrity turtles, so it's a book introducing people to turtles, and it's a picture book, but people really of all ages like it. And
I know, I thought it was going to be a young person's book only, but then I read it, and there's so much stuff in there.
Yeah, there's such amazing things about turtles that we don't know. There's turtles that can sprint on land 15 miles an hour, which is crazy, right? And there's turtles that can climb trees, and turtles with necks longer than their shells, so we really learned a lot, too, while we were working on this book, and they're really amazing animals.
Well, let's talk about the artwork in this book, which is all you. Mm-hmm. Did you two, it's written with Cy Montgomery, who wrote the written part for the most part. How did you guys decide on which turtles to put in this book?
Oh, it wasn't easy.
A short list, and you had to cut some turtles out?
For some of the things, we have profiles on like the most colorful turtle, and we had to pick a turtle. You know, there's a lot of turtles that could have won that award, but
So what turtle is the most colorful turtle?
Well, we have the Western painted turtle because the plastron is just really amazing. It's so colorful. It's similar to our turtle up here. You know, in the north on the Eastern painted turtle. But the plastron is just much more colorful. This has wild pattern all over it.
So it's not a box turtle? I would think that the box, my vote would be for the most beautiful turtle would be a box turtle.
Yeah, it could have been a box turtle. They are really colorful and beautiful. And it's amazing. I was holding a box turtle recently and looking at it, and I was thinking, you know, how can this blend in the wild? Because it's so colorful and it has yellow and orange all over it. But we were out with radio tracking some box turtles, and we knew where one was. We knew it was in a small area, but we couldn't see it. We couldn't find it because it blended right in.
It's amazing. When there's a lot of leaves on the ground and a lot of sort of mixed colors, those things that look so bright and colorful when you hold one up singularly, boy, did that thing just fade into the background.
Yeah, the pattern breaks up, and it's pretty wild.
Now, I got to ask you about your artwork, because I wasn't familiar with your artwork before, and now that I've seen it, I've turned into a huge fan. Did you always paint? Did you always draw?
Yeah, I did. Far back as I can remember, I've been animals in art, and my parents saved some of my early drawings, and I saw them recently, and they're all turtles and dinosaurs, so hasn't changed too much. But yeah, I've grown up painting and drawing and in wildlife in particular, and even more specific, I like reptiles and amphibians.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of reptiles and amphibians, and then living in the Northeast, I end up switching to birds because they're at least around all the year, and yeah. I can't see most of my favorite reptiles, but I'm still passionate about herps. I want to talk to you about a childhood painting and drawing. Did you find things in the wild and then want to draw them, or did you see pictures of them and you wanted to paint them, or what?
Kind of both. I would always be out, you know, and looking for animals and looking for snakes and looking for turtles or fishing, and I would want to paint or draw those. And then, you know, the stuff I would see on TV too, learning about. I love those nature shows, so I'd want to draw stuff like that. Yeah. So,
did you go to art school?
I did. I went to the Art Institute of Boston.
Oh, nice.
And I got a degree in illustration. from them.
So let's talk about how you work. What kind of paints do you like to use?
I paint with acrylics.
Okay.
Acrylic paints. I start out
those can be really unforgiving.
Yeah, I love painting. I know some people don't like acrylics. I actually paint with a hairdryer so I can dry it right away and move along pretty quick.
Wow. Do you do a lot of pre-sketching?
Yeah, I do. I start out by doing, you know, a bunch of sketches, and then underneath the painting is a pencil drawing, mm-hmm. and then I kind of use acrylics like watercolors. I do a lot of washes and slowly build it up, you know, the tones and the colors and the textures.
Do you also use an airbrush?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
Well, the reason I'm asking is, like, the shadow work underneath the turtles looks airbrushed.
Yeah, it's just lots of washes and layers, yeah. And I have a lot of really fine paintbrushes, a lot of detail, tedious stuff, but I like it.
Did you, going to art school, did you ever just think, go out and try other things like painting landscapes or people or
yeah.
abstract? Well, did you ever go abstract?
No, I never went abstract. I did, I mean, when you're in art school, you have to paint all that stuff. You have to do some landscapes.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to do, you know, figure drawing and painting. So that's a thing you just have to do, but they don't have most schools don't have programs to become a turtle artist. So
it would be weird if they did, though.
Yeah, not many of us out there.
The New England School of Turtle Painting.
Yeah,
but the turtles are particularly fascinating to me, the way that you paint them, because there's so much texture there. When you look at the scales on their feet, or you look at the scutes. Or their, you know, the plaster. There's so much texture there. It has to be difficult to capture that.
It takes time. I spend a lot of time with turtles. I've been out, out in the field, and you know, just watching turtles and observing them to see how they move and seeing them in their habitat and stuff. So I take all that and combine it with my sketches and come up with something. But I love painting all the details on the carapaces, the plastrons, the scales. I mean, there's a lot of bird art out there.
Yep, there is.
People dedicated to that, but reptiles and amphibians are some of the most beautiful animals out there. And it's really, really fun. They're kind of overlooked a lot when it comes to wildlife art.
Do you think that herps, reptiles, and amphibians get short end of the stick from people?
Yeah, they probably, I would say.
Well, especially snakes. I know people who should know better, and they'll kill a snake on sight.
Yeah, there's definitely a thing about snakes out there. I have two snakes. I have a snake, a pet snake I've had for 27 years.
I've got you beat. Snake. I've got you beat. I've got one that is 48 years old.
48? What kind?
I have a rosy boa.
Oh, wow.
And I don't even believe in keeping reptiles anymore. I think it's awful. But she's so geriatric that I can't like let her go in California. I wouldn't know where to release her. But and she's only like, you know, 3.5 feet, 4 feet long. And she's only bitten me once when I got my finger between her and a mouse. But, you know, she's like part of the family.
Yeah.
What snakes do you have?
I have a corn snake, which is the one I've had for.
Oh, that's a beautiful snake, man. Oh,
yeah. Really beautiful snake. And then I have a yellow rat snake. Corn snake I got, you know, a long time ago, and my dad was a biology teacher, and so at one point that snake was in his class during the school year. So it's a friendly snake, used to people, and yeah. I don't know how long they live.
For a corn snake you might have the record.
He's in captivity, he's nothing to worry about, no threats or anything. So
no.
Keep going.
Well, it can't be like turtles and tortoises, though, because turtles and tortoises live, like, forever.
They do. The record, I think, is a giant Aldabra tortoise, where they're native to Seychelles Islands in the ocean, and 288.
Wow.
And that was one that was in captivity. I think it was in zoos, so it was documented, so they knew, you know, exactly how old it was. So there could be turtles out there in the wild that are even older.
Now, I just realized your father was a biology teacher, so that explains. Were they really patient when you were, as a child, brought home all sorts of reptiles and amphibians?
Yeah. Both my parents, my mom too, she was really good. I was always bringing stuff home, turtles and snakes, and that's what I was always looking for.
I love that. If people don't realize how important it is to allow your children to do stuff like that. I had the same thing.
Yeah.
Were they always getting loose in your house?
Sometimes. Yeah, I had some of those giant cockroaches, the Madagascan hissing cockroaches.
Yeah, you don't want those loose in your
And those when they were little, you know, when they would lay a bunch of eggs and hatch out, and a bunch of the little ones got loose, so once in a while I would find one of those around the house. So I'm sure my mom was not thrilled with that.
We used to deal with a reptile place in Texas. This is in the 50s and the early 60s.
Yeah.
And we would buy Anolis by the gross. And we lived in a little apartment. We didn't even live in a house. So the stuff was always getting loose. It's like at any one point in time throughout the year, some snake or some lizard would just sort of wander into the room where we were. But that was part of the whole thing. And then eventually I got into sort of capturing local things, you know, maybe keeping them for a year or two and then re-releasing.
Yeah. Yeah, my snake, the yellow rat snake, actually was loose a few winters ago. But, you know, he found him. It was winter here in New Hampshire, so I knew he wasn't going to get outside.
Now, I got to ask you about your line drawings. Of Time and Turtles has got a number of your line drawings. Have you always done line drawings like that?
The pen and inks?
Yeah,
I do a lot more painting than pen and inks, but I do enjoy doing that. And
Is it more of a challenge than painting?
No, I would say it's easier. It's quicker for sure.
But you have to try to capture all different aspects of the animal in just black line on white.
Yeah. Yeah. And different variations of line and weight. And it's definitely different.
Now you're a member of Artists for Conservation.
I am, yeah.
Can you talk to the audience about what that organization is?
Yeah, I'm a member of Arts for Conservation, and it's a group of artists worldwide, international, and artists who, you know, use their work to promote conservation. And often there are artists who, you know, sell and donate a lot of the proceeds to conservation causes, and they highlight it with their art and bring awareness to different conservation projects.
Reptiles and amphibians are in trouble worldwide. I think you mentioned in one of the books, 196 species of reptiles are currently endangered around the world.
Yeah.
And I would almost say there's even more that just haven't paid attention to. For me, in Massachusetts, when I grew up in Watertown outside of Boston, I haven't seen a green snake live in, like, decades.
Yeah. Yeah, the reptiles and amphibians are declining all over. I haven't seen too many green snakes either. One of the reasons is they're really hard to see because they blend in.
Right, right. But even though I'm birding, I'm always out looking, and green snakes just seem to be crashing.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of things are, and turtles are especially.
They're
getting poached. Yeah.
As you bring up in Time of Turtles and also the Book of Turtles, turtles are either run over because they're going from their place where they're brumating and to the pond, or they're going to lay eggs. People just nonchalantly like run over turtles, and then people do collect these and sell them, which is a real problem.
It's a huge problem right now. Turtles are, I think there's over 300, I think there's 362, something like that. There's over 360 species, and 60% of them are, you know, in decline and in danger of extinction. And, poaching is a huge problem, collecting turtles from the wild. Because if you think about it, a turtle, like a wood turtle, which is in Massachusetts, that wood turtle will lay in its lifetime hundreds of eggs. And of all those eggs, maybe only one of them will make it to adulthood, breeding age. So just taking that one turtle from the wild is really bad, really devastating to the population. And, you know, people will take turtles who, you know, don't mean anything bad by it. They just don't realize, you know.
Well, they don't know how to care for it is the biggest problem. Yeah. So many of them die in captivity.
Yeah, it's true. Turtles are having a rough time right now.
Well,
and you know, especially with roads and habitat loss, it's really bad. And even climate change is really affecting turtles because many species of turtles, their sex is determined by temperature. So if it's a few degrees too warmer, you'll get all females.
Oh.
It's, you know, a few degrees too cool, you'll get all males. So, yeah.
It's amazing. Okay. You know, I grew up in I I've been passionate about herps for a long time. But from the book of Time and Turtles and the Book of Turtles, I actually learned things about local turtles.
Yeah.
I never knew that stink pots climb trees.
Yeah.
And it was crazy. Like 3 weeks after I talked to Cy, we were in Rutland State Park doing birds. And I looked over at this tree that had fallen over, and there was a huge northern water snake on there, which I love. I love water snakes.
Yeah.
Although they smell like they exude a smelly substance that's awful.
They're pretty bad.
Yeah, and it's like, and they actually squirt it out too. They can cover quite a distance, but I'm always helping them across the road. So we were going to take a picture of them. And I go, there was this little turtle to the left of it on the tree. I go, oh my God, it's a stink pot. Can you talk about stink pots for a minute?
Yeah, they're musk turtles, and they are really good climbers. They're a little turtle, and they have a little, they have a smooth little shell, and on their face they have a yellow stripe, and they're really good tree climbers, and they'll climb up trees that are kind of hanging over the water.
Yep.
I find them to be really sound sleepers because you can sneak, if you're in a kayak, you can just get under them, and they don't notice it, and then if you wake them up, they'll jump and jump right into your kayak. But
amazing
little turtles. But they're called musk turtles because in stink pots because they you know have a musk if they get disturbed or upset that they release, and it's not as bad as a water snake.
No,
it's not great.
No, water snakes are like bad. You know, from Massachusetts, we have two poisonous snakes that you'll probably never see in your lifetime, unless you know where a den is: copperheads and rattlesnake. But I'll tell you, pound for pound, I think the meanest snake is the water snake.
Yeah.
Because they'll just come after you. They'll just open their mouth and come after you. But they're harmless.
Yeah, they are harmless.
Except for the smell part.
The smell is bad. It's hard to wash off, too.
I have stories about that. I was helping one cross a road, and we were hiking down a path, and it nailed me bad. I mean, I just was – and nothing takes the smell off. Like, we were using handy wipes and stuff like that. Nothing worked. People were walking down the road opposite me, and they're going, wow, something died. And it was me covered in snake musk.
It happens.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is artist, illustrator, and turtle maven, Matt Patterson. Recent published examples of his work can be seen in the books of Time and Turtles and the Book of Turtles. And I recommend both of those really, really strongly. Did I read right that you got to go to Madagascar?
I did, yeah.
Talk to me about that trip.
That was in, let's see, I think it was 2018. I went to Madagascar with the Turtle Survival Alliance. Turtle Survival Alliance is a organization that works around the world protecting and turtles. And what happened was a year before I went, there was a giant confiscation of radiated tortoises. They found, I think, 11,000 in someone's house.
Whoa.
Yeah. And then 6 months later, there's another confiscation of another 7,000.
Jesus Christ. That's got to be most of the population.
They're critically endangered because they're being poached. A lot of them are going to Asia. And so Turtle Survival Alliance, among other groups, were working to – the goal is to get these turtles back into the wild eventually. And so they were doing a survey on different sites to see suitability of releasing them there. And so I got to go and tag along with that. So
wow.
It was amazing. I was in the spiny forest. I lived in this little tent that was it was like a coffin. It was like 100 degrees every night. And the insects were like deafening at times. It was so loud. And there was giant centipedes and millipedes. And there was lemurs and chameleons.
Oh, that sounds excellent.
Tortoises. Yeah, it was an incredible experience. And the spiny forest is – it's like the name suggests. Everything has spines, so you're always pulling stuff out of your legs. But it was incredible. It was really, really hot, too. And there's no escaping the heat. But it was – definitely worth it, and it was incredible seeing these turtles in the wild. So I went to three sites that we surveyed, and they actually did several more sites, but I was able to go along for three of them. And while I was there, I did sketches and reference photos and took notes, and I did a bunch of illustrations based on that trip.
Wow. Now, I want to talk about another book that you illustrated that I think is just really beautiful and really informative, and that's called The Snake and the Salamander.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that book? Because I'm really glad through you that I discovered that book.
Yeah, thanks. It's The Snake and the Salamander, Reptiles and Amphibians from Maine to Virginia. So it's reptiles in the Northeast. And I think there's 83 different species that are profiled in there. And so I did an illustration for each one. And Al Breisch was the writer. He was a state herpetologist for New York for many years. He's retired now. But we did that book together. And it was fun. It was, you know, it's kind of a coffee table guide. You know, it's not really like a field guide you would take out. But
there's so much information in there.
Yeah,
that's really, really helpful. Because I was reading the section about the bog turtle remains the only state turtle that I've never seen.
Yes.
And they're very tightly protected, and so you can't just wander onto the bog turtle habitat. But I was reading in that book about how people have to search for them on their hands and knees in the right habitat in the calcareous fens. It's a great book. Your illustrations for it are beautiful.
Oh, thanks.
Now, you have prints of those that are on sale for from your website, right?
I do, yeah, on my Etsy shop. My website, I have prints as well of a lot of those illustrations and some of the new ones from the Book of Turtles.
And you've also done freshwater fish at the Northeast.
Yeah, that was
now
my
that,
first
those,
book.
Those things look very different, those paintings, because there's a beautiful, detailed, full-color painting of a fish. But then there's a lot of writing. Talk to me about that.
There's no background to the illustrations. It's another, like, you know, kind of coffee table guide. And that was my first book I did. I did it with my father, and he did all the writing for it. And then so we would highlight a fish. When people go fishing, they often see, or they're looking for a game fish. And our idea was to do a book where it has all the fish that you might encounter, and some fish that you wouldn't even know are there because you can't catch them fishing, and either they're too small or they, you know, they're not something that you could use bait for. So I think there's 61 fish in the book, and it's actually getting republished this spring. It'll be out again. So
I love the small fish because you're right. Yeah. Nobody pays attention to them. And some of them are really colorful. These dace and stuff like that.
The dace and the Johnny Darter is one of my favorites. It's so tiny. It's a tiny little fish. It's like maybe an inch and a half long, and it has no ear bladder, so it sinks, and it has to dart. You know, that's how it swims. It'll do these little short, you know, spurts, and then it will sink back to the bottom. And it's a tiny fish. You would never know it was there unless you were looking for him.
What a cool book. Cool. Now, you also make paper sculptures?
Yeah, I've done that. I haven't done any too recently, but I did a lot of bird sculptures and moth sculptures.
Like the big silk moths.
Yeah, the giant silk moths. And I even at one point, I made a bunch of sculptures, and I drove to Mothapalooza, which is a big, it's a big festival, a bunch of moth nerds, and we in Ohio.
You put out those big white sheets?
They were up until like 2 a.m. with sheets, the people there. It was so funny.
If people who are listening don't know about that, and people do that around here too, by the way, during the months where moths are flying, you put up a big white sheet and you shine a light on it, and all the moths are attracted to it, and then they identify them. They take photographs and then they identify. And sometimes other stuff gets attracted to, like, I've seen great tree frogs come in on the sheets, and that's really cool. And other kinds of weird insects too that fly in that you would never know were there.
Yeah. It's a wild night. Wild night of mothing.
So these paper sculptures are much larger than to size.
The moths are about to scale.
Okay.
Because they are really big. And then I do, if you see them on my website, they usually have leaves with them and branch, and that's all paper too. And that's usually, I do like the host tree.
Yeah, yeah.
The type of tree that the caterpillar will eat the leaves of. So, yeah.
Well, you also, I want to mention that there's a lot of habitat in your paintings too. It's sometimes just there in the background. I think it was your painting of the bog turtle has some really nice pitcher plants in the background. So have you ever just painted a habitat without anything specific in it, like all the plants, like a bog?
I try to include, you know, things that are found, interesting things that are found in that habitat. The bog turtle, I actually got to go out with Al with New York Fish and Game to radio track some bog turtles.
Yeah.
And the habitat is, you know, it is hard to get to, which is good for the turtles, right? And it's where we were, there was pitcher plants and there was tons of poison sumac, which is really easy to forget about, grab onto when you're trying to balance. And they're often, you'll encounter like yellow jacket's nests in those areas. So they, where I was, we actually found a deer jawbone, and I did an illustration where I have pitcher plants and the deer, the jawbone and poison sumac. And that was based on my first time seeing a bog turtle in the wild.
Do you ever sketch in the field?
Sometimes I do. And what, I also,
are you just too busy looking?
I'm usually pretty busy looking around, but I'll take tons of photo reference, you know, different plants I see and different angles and kind of use all that to combine that to come up with an illustration. But now, sketching, I do sketch in the field sometimes, like Madagascar. It was really hot and hard to sketch. I was in Belize this past summer and in the rainforest doing the turtle survey, and you know it's a rainforest, so it's always raining. But that was hard.
Yeah, but so much stuff is around when you're in the rainforest. We're completely out of time. We've run out of time. My guest tonight has been artist, illustrator, turtle maven, herp maven, I'd say, Matt Patterson. Recent published examples of his work can be seen in Of Time and Turtles and The Book of Turtles, written with Cy Montgomery. Matt, it's been a real pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It was fun talking turtles.
Oh, yeah, and I'm bumming because we're going into winter and you're not going to get a chance to see a lot of herps.
I know.
I don't like that. you're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.